You will likely be constantly battling yourself mentally with the stress and fear of having to apply all over again. But now, from what most online sources say, a disadvantaged starting point because the match rate is so much lower as a reapplicant and this and that and whatever. If you see that, just remember the success rate isn't zero, and there's no reason why you can't be the person to succeed.
This is Meaningful Medicine. In a challenging and unpredictable world with high burnout rates, this is a podcast where incredible individuals share their most meaningful patient experiences and focus on those moments of positivity and joy that sparked their love of healthcare and changed the way they practice medicine.
Hi, I'm Nicole Hohenstein, and I'm an emergency medicine resident at UCSF.
Hi, I'm Shiva Kayambashi. I'm a doctor and professor of family and community medicine at UCSF.
We're the co-hosts of Meaningful Medicine. We created this podcast to highlight stories of healthcare professionals who have found a sense of meaning, resilience, and joy in their work. Hi, Shiva. How are you doing?
Hi, Nicole. I'm doing really well today. I'm excited to have one of our favorite guests be back today on our podcast. How are you?
I am doing extremely well. I'm on a string of nights right now, but so happy to join you during the waking hours. I'm so excited today to be discussing the process of reapplying into residency on the podcast today. We're lucky enough to have a guest with firsthand experience share his story reapplying into residency. We know that matching into residency can be an emotional and stressful process, and our goal in discussing this topic is to help normalize not matching the first time into residency and take the time to share and discuss the difficult and time-consuming process of reapplying into residency. Residency Match 2023 is coming March 17th and is met with excitement, nerves, and apprehension. The Monday of match week, fourth years from around the country get an email telling them whether or not they fully matched, if they partially matched, or if they went unmatched. Those students who do not fully match will then enter a process called the SOAP, where students can apply for unmatched positions across the country.
That's right, Nicole. So it's a bit of a nerve-wracking time we're in right now for fourth-year medical students. And as we talked about in our episode titled To Be Unmatched in Medicine, we shared the 2022 National Residency Medical Program match data. And among United States MD fourth-year medical students, about 1 in 15 or 7% of students who applied to residency were unmatched. If you take all fourth-year U.S. MD and DO programs and also fourth-year international medical school students who are applying for residency, that percentage is quite higher. About 20% or 1 in 5 of all applicants go unmatched into first-year R1 intern positions. It's actually quite a wide range, but that's more than we expected. And most students and most medical schools don't really talk about that. And the assumption is that everyone is going to match. So it's important to mention that the match data is only including students who match into a first year position. So we don't have data to show the number of students who partially match, that is, they don't match into their specialty of choice after intern year. Because this data is not published, it can be hard to support students experiencing a partial match. And for those who don't know, some specialties, including anesthesiology, dermatology, radiology, and several others, require applicants to apply for a separate intern year in addition to their specialty of choice, which would begin after intern year. It all sounds a little bit confusing, and I think the big point that we want to make is that not matching when you're a fourth-year medical student is a striking and surprising experience, and it's not talked about, though it is actually fairly common.
Thank you so much for sharing that data, Shiva. It's very confusing. There's a lot of numbers involved, but the goal of this podcast today is to normalize the experience of not matching or partially matching and discuss ways that we can empower and support one another when this situation inevitably happens. I'm so excited to have one of our favorite guests back on the podcast today. Dr. Andreas Calvillo was one of my amazing UCSF medical school classmates who's currently doing his intern transitional year at Santa Clara Valley Medical Center. Andreas is the first of his family of Mexican immigrants to pursue higher education. He loves teaching and mentoring and will be sharing his experience reapplying into residency into a PGY2 position or second year position. Welcome, Dr. Andres Calvillo.
Thanks, Nicole, and thanks, Shiva, for having me again.
We are so happy to have you back, Dr. Calvillo. We like to start all of our episodes asking our guests if you could share an especially meaningful moment or experience from your early life or early training, maybe even in your intern year so far.
Boy, if I had to pick up one of the many, I would probably have to pick my first rapid response. So for those unfamiliar with what a rapid response is, it is basically when there's a concern about the patient necessitating greater help than what is readily available. An overheard intercom message is announced, your team name is called, and you go to bedside ASAP. Of course, this comes with a sense of dread, a couple of skipped heartbeats of your own, and lots of sweat. In summary, I was taking care of someone who had intestinal problems, who all of a sudden had a super high pulse and low blood pressure. Before this happened, we were worried for internal bleeding, and now we had evidence to be even more worried about that. The rapid response happened early in the morning before I was even supposed to be in the hospital. And of course, my senior hadn't arrived yet, but thankfully my co-intern was there early also, and he went with me. When I arrived to the room, all I could think about was, holy crap, holy crap, holy crap, I don't know what to do, what am I going to do, oh my god, like, help. I had the focus on myself in a negative way, really only paying attention to the knowledge that I felt wasn't there. Thankfully, other senior residents and the entire trauma surgery team arrived shortly after I did. It was pretty bad. They were thinking out loud and approaching the situation with a very organized and calm attitude, turning the seemingly chaotic situation into digestible steps within order. This was memorable because my perspective shifted from focusing on the absence of knowledge to the presence of what was right in front of me. The more I think back to that situation, the more I reflect on how much I've actually learned and how I would be better equipped to tackle that rapid response if it were to happen again. I also think about how applicable this is to the whole process of reapplying has been. And if I had to do either of those things again, I'd still be sweaty, of course, but I think we'd still make it through.
Thank you so much for sharing. My heart rate was definitely increasing as you described that situation. And I love how you flipped it back around to the topic at hand today, which is reapplying into residency. Andres, you have recently reapplied to a radiology PGY2 or second year program position. How has the reapplication process been for you?
Yeah, so it has been tough, to be honest. It feels like I haven't really cut a break since 2 years ago when I started thinking about applying for the first time. There's so much that I feel I constantly need to be doing because I'm still trying to secure my future career, essentially. But I will say that moments of gratitude, no matter how small, have made a great difference in my day-to-day. I'm thankful for my advisors and mentors who have remained in touch and continue to respond to my many emails. Thankful for my co-interns who ask how I'm doing. Thankful for my family and friends who care about me, and also for my chief residents and current program director for helping me accommodate my a schedule necessitating that the middle of my year be as flexible as possible. So having those positive moments and reflections throughout this whole process has definitely helped this just challenging situation to be in.
I've been so impressed, Andres, when we spoke to you last time. You have such a bright and positive attitude going forward, taking a setback as just a bump in the road as opposed to a wall on your path. And I really, both Nicole and I have been really impressed by your energy and your spirit. Your journey is inspiring to us, and I'm sure to anyone who's listening. Could you talk a little bit about how you've been able to balance the applications and interviews and building your resume with all of the rigors and stresses of being an intern this year?
Of course. Figuring out how much I was going to revise my application helped me set digestible goals. It was relatively less work in terms of volume of things I had to do since most of it was done already from the previous cycle. But I wanted to edit my personal statement and craft some personal statements specific to programs to further explicitly express my interest. And that's some feedback I was actually given last year that programs just didn't think I would go to their program. So regardless how I felt about that feedback, I tried my best to turn it into an actionable thing and apply it to as many other programs as I could. So writing close to 100 personalized personal statements was definitely not going to be realistic. So I had to make it a digestible goal and just do my best with that. And what that meant was trying to prioritize the programs I was most interested in and working my way top down to see how much I can get through. And at the end of the day, when the application was going to be due, I knew that I would have approached it into the best way possible. And regarding building my resume, I had some ongoing projects, and trying to strengthen my application with objective measures such as publication numbers was another actionable thing I could do. It gave me the added motivation and push to stop feeling like I was bothering my PIs and others working on the projects and really try to advocate for both the project and now also myself. That's something I struggle with, so trying to better myself there is an ongoing thing. Additionally, prioritizing quality and building on passions and interests was actually kind of nice, because not only to fill out that hobbies and interests section that stressed me out because I felt like all I've been doing is work, but also to focus on positive areas of my life that I knew could bring me some sort of joy. And overall, planning my schedule with upcoming intern year rotations, or for anybody listening, for work, whether you have a gap year or fully unmatched, working on apps in a balanced way may require a lot of front-loaded mental energy and work, but it was definitely worth it looking back. Getting those blocks of words and harder rotations at the beginning of my year helped me get meaningful evaluations in, and that actually helped my program director write a cumulative letter of recommendation that was representative of my work ethic and the positive qualities I know I can bring to a future place, whoever will have me. So I say they write me a good letter of recommendation. Hopefully that's what happened, but can't be too sure.
I can only imagine, just personally, intern year is full of a lot of firsts. You're changing institutions. You don't even know where anything is. You don't know who anyone is, yet you have this new role as a doctor. And on top of learning this new role, becoming an MD, you are also balancing reapplying into residency. So thank you so much for sharing your tips and tricks for others. I wanted to ask you, was it hard to get support for your application since you did switch institutions from UCSF to Santa Clara Valley Medical Center?
Yeah, so that switch was pretty interesting. I would say that it could feel pretty disheartening when nobody who you felt was there for you reaches out. It makes sense to feel that way with how much attention we pay to this whole process, especially being unmatched. That's all we're thinking about. However, we can't expect people to read our minds, so reaching out on our own behalf is okay, especially if at times we feel paralyzed or don't really know what that's going to lead to. That's okay. This likely isn't the most important thing going on in the people's lives who we're reaching out to, but that's also okay. Reach out to your previous advisor, someone on Twitter, a resident with whom you vibe with during an interview. Thankfully, my advisor has been very responsive, and so has my program director at my current institution. So I feel that I can reach out to them with whatever questions I have and receive a very thoughtful and timely response on both of their behalfs. I know everyone's doing their own thing, but it's really nice to have that support when I need it. I think they, being the advisor and current program director, they have experience with this application process, and oftentimes also with the reapplication process, because I may not be the first person who has unmatched in their program. So they know the process well, and getting their insight always feels helpful. And something I'd like to mention is that advisors are there to advise. So if you feel like you're being too needy or that you should know the answer to the questions you're asking, that's also a very common reaction, and it's okay to do it anyway. If you're made to feel that way for whatever reason, then it's probably not on you. It's on whoever is responding to you. Sometimes some people are more direct, more objective, less empathetic, and you have to remember that you are doing this for you. Get what you need to improve and keep reaching out. Reaching out is so important so that you can learn, commiserate, and even grow together. Even better is finding one or two people with whom you can keep as close of tabs on as is helpful for the both of you, day to day or weekly, for example. Sometimes we need that extra external motivation of checking in on someone else, and if that works, just lean right into it.
That is such great advice, to not allow yourself to feel less than or feel inferior, and to just ask for what you need from a place of if I can say, a place of confidence. You didn't match, but that doesn't mean you're not a wonderful person who's deserving of matching. You didn't match this time. And there's so many other factors. I don't think of it too differently than medical students, or actually I should say post-bac students that I mentor, who don't get into medical school the first time they apply. But that doesn't mean they won't get in the next time they apply. And there are so many subjective factors that are not even related to the quality of the person. They're more related to the people on the other side, on the admissions side, that are maybe random and not having anything to do with, of course, your quality. And I think it's such a hard thing, Andres, to not take it personally. Was that difficult for you to be able to get your mental state to be shifting from maybe shame or embarrassment or grief to a place of hope and positivity and strength that I am worthy?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely wasn't easy to really make that switch, because like we talked about last time, when it happens to receive that horrible email on Monday of match week where it's like, congratulations, you matched into a 1-year program, or unfortunately, you didn't match to any program. Like, that's something that everyone hopes doesn't happen to them. And so when it does, I, for one, just hit a wall. I was very numb in the moment. And it really did take a lot of that processing of grief and that shame, or just imposter syndrome as high as it's ever been. And really practicing this just mindfulness, gratefulness on the day-to-day of, where have I brought myself? What have I done to get myself to where I'm at now? And really trying, like I mentioned at the beginning, focusing on what is in front of us and not just the absence of what's not there, because we're never going to know everything. We're never going to know how to handle all the things that come our way, but having that pivot and positive perspective is going to be the most helpful thing to keep us going.
Andres, it sounds like you certainly aren't the only intern in your program who's going through the reapplication process now. Could you share a little bit about how it's been for your colleagues, and how are you able to support one another?
Yeah, it's like you both mentioned, it's not an uncommon thing to happen, but with as little attention as it gets, it sure feels that way when it does happen to you. And it may feel like we're the only ones, but there are others out there who somehow know what they're doing, somehow feels like they have everything figured out, but that's, again, our own response to the stressful situation. Many of my friends also went unmatched, some partially and others completely unmatched, needing to soap into a position if it was available, and some needing to reassess their specialty choice. That's a pretty big decision to have to make, especially if we're trying to secure a spot within soap week where everything moves so, so quickly, because you're essentially reapplying to residency in a few days. And for those of us who are partially matched into an engineer but not an advanced specialty, all of this keeps on going with internee and actual responsibilities for people's lives that we have to now assume. It's stressful, and we frequently need to just let out that negativity. When such a major obstacle lands directly in front of you like this, it's important to reflect and determine what matters to you, what you are not willing to give up, what you are willing to settle for, and what you're willing to keep fighting for. So my friends and I, as well as other people with whom I've only messaged and never actually spoken with, talk about these things a lot. Really trying to share our thoughts, concerns, and uncertainties with one another to hopefully make something productive out of those screaming voices in our heads. Talking with someone else in a similar situation may be helpful, and also talking to someone who you trust and who you know will listen to you, whether that's a therapist, your parent, your best friend, or even your pet or mirror, if they're willing to stick around. Talking out loud helps that ungraspable sense of chaos, as I described, when we just let that little voice in our head run wild. And oftentimes I've been surprised with how much better I feel making myself truly listen to other people. It really gets me out of my own head and allows me to be present with them, for them, in that moment. I would say constant communication and check-ins help alleviate the stress that can build up when we're struggling alone, and it's a great way to support one another. Oftentimes, when we are supporting and encouraging one another, the same advice we give applies to ourselves. So I often realize that it's much easier to talk to a friend in a very similar situation and mean it than it is to talk to myself and believe it. So do whatever works.
Thank you so much, much for sharing the community that you've built that supports each and every one of you guys through this unbelievable and very difficult process. I was hoping to ask, since you have so many wonderful, smart minds thinking about the process of applying to residency and now the reapplication process to residency, has there been any discussion about, is there a solution that you guys have thought of that might create a more equitable, a more transparent, and a better process for applying into residency?
Having a lot of people come together is definitely super nice. And I definitely cannot take the credit for creating this community because it's so many people just coming up and offering their own energy. A lot of times a position may open up and somebody finds out about it and shares it for everyone to have a chance. And it's so heartwarming to have that community because it really takes away that perception of, oh, we're all in it for ourselves. If I see a position, I'm going to not tell anybody about it. So that's been incredible. And this, I feel like it's just a challenging thing that's going to continue to happen because of how many more medical students there are, including unmatched applicants from previous cycles, to just add up and basically perpetuate this problem that we're having. Where I remember last year, programs would tell me, oh, sorry, we couldn't offer you an invite. There was this many applicants who applied and it's impossible to review all of them. And then now this next cycle, it's, oh, I'm sorry, we have this many applicants, which is even more than last time, and it's impossible to review all of them. So I wish I had a solution to help alleviate that process because I have no idea how many people or how many minds come together to form a resident selection committee. And there are hundreds, sometimes thousands of applications for only a few spots. And it seems like a lot of it is luck of who's going to really advocate for a specific application at one part of the day or who's better at selling someone than somebody else. And there's just so much that's out of our control. And as much as I really want to believe that the match process really favors an applicant, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that isn't talked about, that when applicants do know those extra little hidden things, it really sets them up for better success. And sometimes programs may say, oh, we don't really take into consideration any post-interview communication, and there's no way for us to know. There's no way for us to really know the selection process. And we can send emails, we can send letters of interest, we can send our firstborn. We don't really know what's going to be helpful. So I think if there's a way to really help this in the future, it may be to really create rules that either encourage it or discourage it, or actually just ban it altogether for post-interview communications, because it can feel like this whole process was for nothing when an email saying, I want to go here, may have made the difference for one person and not the rest of the thousands who applied.
I've heard a lot of discussion about different ways that program directors and even, you know, people higher up are rethinking the application process. And I know sometimes, depending on the specialty, there's a mismatch in number of positions versus the number of applications. Oftentimes, when we're talking about programs in desirable cities or desirable programs, they do get a majority of the applications and it can be hard to sift through. Some specialties have piloted a signaling program where applicants can signal to 5 up to 20 different programs, depending on the specialty, and signal that they are in their top program list to try to help navigate who's actually interested in the program versus sift through all of the other applications. Additionally, other programs have discussed potentially limiting the number of applications an applicant can send or limiting the number of interviews an applicant can accept to try to allow for many people to get as many interviews and have as many opportunities as possible. So I think it's a complex situation that is continuing to change, but it'll be interesting to see how these new pilots go and what situation comes up in the future for applying to residency.
thought that was great and very helpful. And I just wanted to pull up a little bit of data that comes from the American Association of Medical Colleges News, which is just put out a year or two ago, that really does highlight the fact that the problem is that medical school enrollments have increased quite a lot, but residency slots have not. And so that mismatch that we're talking about is not going away. We know that we have a shortage of physicians in the country. So we've increased medical schools, right? Medical school enrollment spaces, but you have to match the number of residencies. And that has to do with, I think, funding for programs from a federal level. So I'm really grateful that we're actually talking about the larger picture, as well as the experience that Andres and classmates are having.
Thank you so much for that data, Shiva. I'd love to circle back to Andres and ask, what have you learned through this challenging process? And what would you like people to know who will have to participate in this year's SOAP, which is the Supplemental Offer and Acceptance Program, and they have to participate in potentially the reapplication cycle next year?
Yeah, I would say that if it feels that all of your hard work was for nothing, if it feels like the imposter syndrome is as high as ever, if it feels like you're never going to make it, those feelings are 100% valid. Those feelings are expected and make sense when zooming out and looking at the whole situation. What is important, though, is that if you don't make it through the SOAP, it is not the end of the world. It's not the end of your career. It is just going to be a pivot. Reaching out to an advisor or friend, literally anyone, as we talked about before, is going to be the great first step. As I've mentioned, coming up with a plan for how to improve for next cycle, looking for other opportunities if you decide you need to do something else, reevaluate specialty choice, reaffirming specialty choice, all of that is important. So I would say if you can, pause and be honest with yourself, because I think that's the best thing that we can do in this situation.
Your point, Andres, about it not being the end of the world, I think is so important, because it does look like the end of the world when you're first faced with it, right? That moment of grief, more than a moment, that period of grief for however days, weeks, or longer, that experience feels like it's an end and maybe a complete loss. But I really appreciate your perspective of zooming out, stepping back and saying, actually, this is a chance to pivot. I really love your language around that. And I think it's helpful. What do you think, Andres, has been the toughest part for you personally in this reapplication process to residency?
As someone who is partially matched into an intern year, but not an advanced position, the challenging part has been balancing reapplying and keeping up with intern year. For those who are fully matched and are working or doing something else requiring most of their time, I can imagine that would bring similar challenges. I'm at an intern year program that can often be tough due to the amount of time and hard work required being a county hospital. So finding that bit of energy at the end of the day or during the day off that I have has been challenging. Trying to learn during the day, constantly fighting that little voice, as you just mentioned, in my head that is screaming, you should know this, like you went to medical school, how can't you know this simple question? And really trying my best not to let myself feel down, especially when I introduce myself to a new team and the icebreaker is always, tell me where you're from and where you're going next. All of that can add up and feel exhausting. So I would say on the more application focus side, the toughest part was probably revising my personal statement and or preparing for interviews again. Those two were pretty up there. I felt I was happy with my personal statement the first time around, but when asking for advice on what I could do to make my application better, I was given the feedback that it would be important to mention being unmatched in my personal statement, but doing it in a way that didn't sound negative and was actually a bit emotionally charged so that it could be more memorable. When I first received that feedback, I didn't really know how to interpret it, because as soon as I started talking about being unmatched, it was definitely charged, but I had a difficult time finding the positive growth aspect of this whole unnecessary process. So rewriting my last paragraph was tough, but writing something down, then getting feedback on it, can be a sure way to keep things moving and improving. Preparing for interviews was also tough too, mainly because I kept thinking that my responses weren't going to be good enough if they weren't good enough the first time. Practicing out loud has been helpful. I cannot stress that enough. If it feels embarrassing or too nerve-wracking, it's better to get it out during a practice session than the real deal. I recently met with my program director to do a mock interview, And I almost backed out of it. It was like, oh no, like I should be okay. I should know this by now. But it was definitely very helpful, and I'm very grateful because I was definitely very nervous again. And it was helpful to not let that imposter syndrome start to hover over us again. I made myself practice with my friends and would find myself actually getting really stressed and having my mind go blank. And it was actually great practice though, because then I could practice my responses in that stress situation and better remember the main bullet points I tried to cover with my different responses. Actually, another thing, contacting letter of rec writers was a bit tough too, just because their emails may have changed, they're busy, on vacation, difficult to get a hold of for whatever reason. So, not horrible, but that's just one part of the application that is out of my control. And when we're in the situation, I feel like we try to grab on and try to do the most we can in our own controlled environment. So, early communication is definitely helpful with that. Just even in March, if you go Unmatched saying, hey, I went Unmatched, I'm gonna try again, if that's what you plan on. Can I ask you for a letter of rec again later after I improve on some things? That just gets the conversation going so that it also helps them think about how they can support you and what they can write about if they update their letter.
Can I just say that you are so inspiring? You inspire me so much, and you are such an amazing physician. I just want you to know. And you deserve this so much. And I really believe that your words and your story are just going to inspire so many other people. I apologize for the emotions, but I do think they're warranted because what you're going through is an extremely difficult situation that I think hits a lot of us hard because we know how difficult this process is and how many decades we work to this one goal. And it's really, truly inspiring to hear that you are so positive and that you are helping others and lifting others up by giving them the tools to be successful. So thank you so much for this.
What have I done?
See what you went and did, Andres. You being so inspiring has broken her. You made her cry. No one's made Nicole cry before. This is a first. So, no, Andres, what Nicole is saying is so true. You really are. It's just really so mind-blowing how inspiring. You are so modest and humble about your journey, but you are greatness. I mean, you are greatness. We're talking to someone who's incredible and who is a leader and who is a bright, optimistic person. Just the fact that you're maintaining that and leading the way for others, especially for yourself and for others. I feel what Nicole is sharing. And the fact that you didn't match, I just want to keep re-saying this to anyone who doesn't match that first time. It's not you, it's the process. Like, you know that terrible game, musical chairs, that terrible, terrible game that children play? I hate it. I always hated it. I can't stand it when I was three, and I still can't stand seeing it. But the idea that there are fewer chairs than there are children, right? But it's more. I mean, there are fewer residency slots than there are applicants. So it's inevitable that there are going to be people who didn't get the chairs. And so how you deal with it is the most important thing, that you didn't give up and that you held on to it and just, you know, found what you needed to do and are doing it and are more so even willing to talk about it is yet another layer of your strength.
Thank you both for your very kind words. It really means a lot.
I love that analogy, Shiva, the musical chairs analogy. I think it's so true. And it just shows the power of Andreas's perseverance. And it's really incredible. Our podcast loves to talk about wellness and resilience. And I can imagine during this stressful year, it's been really tough to maintain your wellness, maintain your resilience. How have you been taking care of yourself during this time?
Yeah, you are imagining very correctly. Finding a routine was very helpful to make sure that I did the things that I knew made me feel better, even if I didn't have any energy for it, like making my way to the gym, or meal prepping for a week to reduce the mental energy of what I was going to eat for dinner, or going to buy bulk frozen burritos to make sure I had some sort of nutrition on nights when I just could not bring myself to do anything. And like that backup is definitely some self-care that I've practiced. And less things to worry about and more mental ease when trying to relax is the goal that I constantly try to do. And it's quite incredible how little rest days off can feel if I'm trying to both rest and work, or I'm trying to get ahead because now it feels like the beginning of a new week. I can just do some more work in now, or if I need to catch up from the previous week, I didn't get to the things I didn't do. And it's just too blurry of a distinction between work and rest. And I think that when I'm able to devote a day fully for rest, of rejuvenation, of getting re-energized, if you're an introvert, just stay at home, extrovert, go out, do whatever brings you life and joy and recharges your batteries. Because when I look back on those days, if I start off by saying, today, I'm not going to work, I'm not going to make any sort of checklist that I need to get done today, I'm not going to look at my email, I'm just going to block all of that off. And if I just declare that at the beginning of the day to myself, it's almost like I'm allowing myself to set myself up to actually have a good day. Even if that means just to take a trip to the local mall and just walk around, see other people living their own lives, having their own problems and joys, and have no idea what I'm going through. And it's that sort of sense of Sonder where we're all living our own lives and we can be stuck in our own negativities and our own challenges, but nobody's going to know that. And I think that can be eye-opening to see other people just living their own lives and just knowing that things are going to move on. And it's important to allow ourselves to heal, recharge, and rest, even though we're trying to do 5 million things at the same time. Just, it's okay to not sometimes.
Andres, in closing, you've already shared some very practical advice. I wonder if you have any other or broader, maybe more mental or spiritual advice for others who will need to reapply for residency.
I think I maybe mentioned it last time too, but we'll always reiterate that it's important to take your time to process what you're feeling. Some people, as you mentioned, Shiva, it takes hours, days, weeks, months, ongoing. It's okay the way that works for you. Talk to a friend, a therapist, anyone who can really hear you out in those moments. When trying to think about a plan, talk to an advisor or someone who has experience and or has even gone through this before. They'll know what to look out for. They'll know what to think. And then once there is a plan, it's important to break it up into digestible and realistic steps so that you're happy with it. I ask myself quite a bit this time around where if I cut this corner and don't match again, would I regret it? And oftentimes that helped me push through those things that I was just so tired to get around to doing, but it's really something that is a small thing to do in that moment that can get done, as opposed to just making your to-do of get into residency second time around. Like that's very unrealistic. Once you do have that digestible plan, don't forget to do the plan. Sometimes we find comfort in planning, but then when it comes to doing, we get stuck. It's a very common response, feeling efficiency in developing a plan, but then stopping before doing the plan. Happens to all of us. So just start moving and things will start happening and things will start getting done. And then as you go through all of this, really gauge your energy, always feeling like we have something to be doing and just it never ending can be exhausting. So it's important to check in with yourself to evaluate how it's okay to take an evening off when you're feeling exhausted. Don't study, don't work, watch TV, eat a chocolate cake, like do whatever you need to do. And one way that's helped me try to reduce that feeling of taking a break and it being okay is to make weekly goals as opposed to daily goals so that things that I can finish in a week feels much less suffocating than having to finish it in a day. It's nice to have relaxation that's incorporated into a schedule intentionally. And I would say lastly, know that you will likely be constantly battling yourself mentally with the stress and fear of having to apply all over again. But now from what most online sources say, a disadvantaged starting point because the match rate is so much lower as a reapplicant and this and that and whatever. If you see that, just remember the success rate isn't zero and there's no reason why you can't be the person to succeed.
What a wonderful way to end an incredible interview. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your incredibly busy schedule to share and inspire us tonight. Thank you so much.
Of course, it's my pleasure.
Thank you so much, Dr. Andres Calvillo. We hope to talk to you again soon.
I'll be there.
Thank you for tuning in today
and allowing us to be one of your meaningful moments.
please rate, review, and subscribe, and share with friends, family, and colleagues. Meaningful Medicine was produced by Shiva Kayambashi, Nicole Hohenstein, David Elkin, Nikki Elkin, Ahaley Chattopadhyay, and Lei Kodama. Editing by Nicole Hohenstein, Nikki Elkin, and Lei Kodama. Intro and closing by Daniel Wendling. On Meaningful Medicine, we are careful to ensure that all stories are compliant with healthcare privacy laws, and details may have been changed to ensure patient confidentiality. All views expressed are of the person speaking and not their employer.